Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
And we love to learn about the lives of remarkable people and find out how they cope during difficult times on the show. On this episode, we'll learn about some of the unsung heroines of World War II, the brave young Jewish women in the ghettos of the Nazi occupation in Poland. They saw and acknowledged the truth of their time and risked their lives in the fight for justice and freedom.
And joining us is author Judy Battalion, who did painstaking research in writing the new book, The Light of Days, The Untold Story of Women Resistance Fighters in Hitler's Ghettos. It's a story that is so inspirational, fascinating, and important that Steven Spielberg has optioned it for a major motion picture. Judy, we thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Paint the picture for us, if you will, of the ghettos in the Nazi occupation in Poland during World War II and the female resistance fighters in those ghettos.
Sure. So just for some context, there were over 400 ghettos in Poland in World War II. Nazis set up ghettos to imprison Jews. These were usually in what were the formerly poor areas of cities and towns, and they threw out all Christians who were living there and forced all the Jews, the local Jews, to move in. They were usually extremely crowded. The ghettos were very small. You could have several families sharing a room. They were suffered from tremendous hunger. There was disease. There was thirst. And people were truly terrified. They didn't know what was going on. They were being tortured. There was, they lived in fear of death constantly. People felt fully occupied, both physically and mentally, psychically. So now you asked about the women in these conditions. So the women that I write about in my book are young Jewish women who were in these ghettos and came together or worked together to resist and to defy the Nazis. And they did many different things that I try to show a wide range of their organized resistance activity. In some cases, it was organizing soup kitchens and secret underground schools, secret cultural programs, they wrote underground bulletins, they edited newspapers. Some women were, they left the ghettos, and I can get into that later. They pretended to be Christian. They would go out and blow up Nazi supply trains, assassinate Gestapo men. They were also ghetto fighters in ghetto uprisings. They were guerrilla fighters. And many of the women that I talk about, at the risk to their lives, they were courier girls. They slipped in and out of ghettos all the time, connecting the ghettos, bringing Jews information, bringing them these bulletins, sometimes braiding them in their hair. And eventually they were actually helping to arm the underground, smuggling in weapons, ammunition, explosives, and also rescuing other Jews, helping take Jews out of the ghettos and finding them safe spaces, either in cities or in the forests.
It seems like these are women that we should have known about for years and years now. I mean, there's so many different heroes that we've been fortunate enough to learn from during the Holocaust, World War II, but these women seem so special and unique. Why is it that we are just now learning about them? And how did you even find out about them? Because that was by mistake as well.
Yes, this was completely by accident. Let me start by answering there. This whole project began serendipitously. It began 14 years ago. It's been quite an odyssey. I was living in London at the time, and I was thinking and exploring thinking a lot about my Jewish identity. I myself am the granddaughter of Holocaust survivors, and I was thinking a lot about what I call the emotional legacy of the Holocaust, the generational transmission of trauma. And in my own life, I was thinking a lot about how I responded to danger and how my Holocaust heritage had sort of shaped my understanding of risk and danger. And I decided to write a piece about this kind of psychological element. And I happened to be doing some research at the British Library and accidentally came across a book It was an old, unusual book in a blue fabric cover with gold lettering and, a dusty old book. It was also in Yiddish. It was called Frauen in die Ghettos, Women in the Ghettos. And I started flipping through the book, but this was a story of women in the ghettos like I had never heard. This was a collection of sort of dozens and dozens of names from photographs, bios, obituaries, excerpts from testimonies of young Jewish women who fought the Nazis from the ghettos, with chapter titles like weapons and ammunition and partisan combat. So I immediately was stunned by this. I thought my Yiddish was a bit rusty. I reread it a few times trying to make sure I was getting this right. But I knew right away that this was a really remarkable story that I needed to work on.
You know, the one question that comes to my mind is how much surveillance did the Nazis have over these women? I mean, how is it that they were able to mount this kind of resistance?
Well, there are many reasons. So women in particular took on this role in the resistance where they left the ghettos. They did work on the outside. And yes, there was tremendous surveillance. Every step they took crossing the ghetto gate or border, every step outside, was at the risk to their lives. And many of them were killed. But it was easier for women to pass than for men, to pass as Christians. And that's partially why women took on a lot of this work on the outside. Women were not circumcised, so they didn't have a physical marker of their Jewishness on their body. They also, in the 1930s in Poland, boys and girls were subject to mandatory education, but often in Jewish families, they would send their sons to Jewish schools, but their daughters to Polish public schools. This was to save on tuition. But ultimately, this meant that the girls who I write about, who ended up becoming these underground operatives, they were accustomed to Polish mores, to their habits, to Christian prayers even, and mannerisms and nuance. They also learned to speak Polish like a Pole, they always say, without their creaky Yiddish accent. They were performing. This was a life and death acting job. They were performing at every second of the day, every second of their missions. They were living these false identities. But several of them managed, and they did it.
We love having you as part of our Nobody Told Me family of listeners. We know a lot of you want to be your own boss or already operate your own business. That's why we want you to know about Shopify.
Hear that? That's the sound of another sale on Shopify and the moment another business dream becomes reality.
Shopify puts you in control of every sale channel. So whether you're selling satin sheets from Shopify's in-person POS system or offering organic olive oil on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you're covered.
Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform that's revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle.
And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers.
Once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere.
What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level.
Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 170 countries.
Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nobody, all lowercase.
Go to shopify.com/nobody to take your business to the next level today.
Shopify.com/nobody.
What can we learn today about resilience from them? And what can the modern young woman in 2021 who is dealing with such different struggles, how can she try and get some of that courage and apply it to her own life?
That's a great question. And I think there are a few things we can learn. The first one is that different people resisted and revolted in different ways. Everyone's different. Everyone has different personalities and conditions in their lives. And as I mentioned earlier, some women, you know, they were taking care of orphans and helping to rescue them and finding children in hiding spots, whereas others were combat fighters and throwing explosives. And they, you know, people can resist in different ways that sort of suit them and their personalities and their life situations. Also, something that's really interesting to me in this story is that these weren't just random groups of men and women who got together to resist. These were organized resistance efforts that I write about. And many of these groups were groups before the war. Jewish youth in Poland in the 30s was organized into youth movements. A huge number of young Jewish Poles were members of these youth movements, a bit like the Scouts, but more so. These were intellectual, spiritual, emotional, and social training grounds for young people. And they learned to value truth and self-awareness and self-sufficiency and pride in their heritage, pride in their identity. They also learned how to work together. They valued collaboration, collectivity, egalitarianism, equality. And many of them had, even before the war, these young people had left their homes to live together in communes. So I think that what I'm getting at in this, my long-winded answer, is that These were organized efforts among people who had bonds, who trusted each other. And I think we can learn about that going forward too, about how to organize and how to think through acts of rebellion and resistance in the conditions that we have.
How were they able to organize during this particular time?
Well, as I was saying, they were already part of these groups, so they had a structure to them. They already had leadership, sort of hierarchies, and the groups knew each other. They trusted each other. They often lived together, even in the ghettos as well. So they organized the same way that they organized themselves before the war.
And tell us more about what their lives had been like before the war and then once they got into these ghettos.
It's very interesting, 1930s Poland. It was, you know, a time of both great cultural flourishing for the Jewish community. There were 180 Jewish newspapers in Warsaw in the 1930s. Art, theater, professorships abounded, museums, culture. It was a really thriving cultural community. But there was also anti-Semitism. There was also a sense of second-class citizenry that Jews experienced, and that Jews had different political parties and different values for how to handle that. But in general, the people I wrote about, many of these women, as I said, they're not only educated up to eighth grade, they went to university. Often I came across a story about, you know, a young woman who shot Gestapo men in the head and had a history degree from Warsaw University. Women were educated. They were leaders both in the youth movements. Women had the vote actually in Poland quite early, 1918, before many Western countries. And in general, they lived, you know, modern European lives. So the transition to ghettoization was brutal and horrific.
Whose story really stuck out to you as somebody who is a real role model and a heroine that we don't know about, but we really should?
Oh my goodness, you can't have a favorite child. Don't make me do that.
We're not the most surprising.
I mean, they were all so surprising, you know. I mean, I can tell you a few. I don't even know who to pick. You know, let me tell you about one woman, Frumka Plotnitska, who I've certainly never heard of. She was a leader in the youth movements before the war. And when war hit in 39, she was 25 years old. And like many of the movement, and including my grandparents too, she fled east and she made it across the border. She was in Belarusian territory, so she was actually safe. But she couldn't take it. Fleeing a crisis didn't suit her. She felt so responsible to her people that she smuggled herself back into Nazi-occupied Poland. She went to Warsaw. She became a leader in the Warsaw Ghetto. Again, she chose to be there.
Wow.
She ran soup kitchens and cultural programs and negotiated with Jewish and Polish and German leaders. She put a kerchief over her face. She had very Jewish features, but she tried to hide them and traveled through the country, connecting groups in all these ghettos. All illegal. She gave lectures in these circumstances, bringing hope and spirit to people. She then brought them news. She went around telling the news of the Nazi extermination plan, the genocide. She told many of the Jewish communities about this. She was the first person to bring weapons into the Warsaw Ghetto. She hid them in a sack of potatoes, two guns under the potatoes. She was then stationed in this town, southwest Poland, called Bajin, where she led the underground and helped them prepare for revolt, and was killed shooting Nazis from a bunker. In fact, after the war, she was given some military recognition by what was then sort of the Polish leadership. But, and yet her story is completely forgotten. She was known as Die Mamy, in Yiddish, the mother, among so many of the Jews in Poland.
That story is fascinating. What else? What other stories stick out to you?
So, for instance, I mean, I was really taken by the story of this one woman, Bella Chazan. She was with the underground from the get-go, and they stationed her in this town of Grudno. And she was going to live on the outside because she was going to do a lot of career and mission work between the ghettos. And she was pretending 24 hours a day to be Catholic, to be a Christian girl. And so she got a room in a house, and she needed to get a job because otherwise it would look suspect. So she went to the local employment agency and they said, "Oh, we have the perfect job for you." And she got a job working as a secretary for the Gestapo. She worked in their office, you know, serving them tea, and she did some translation work for them. And they all knew her. She was one of their great employees. But what she did was she ended up stealing their documents, and she would bring them to the Jewish underground, who had, you know, these makeshift forgery labs where they could copy documents, Aryan documents, fake, you know, they made fake passports, fake visas, fake travel papers, fake IDs, so Jews could pretend not to be Jewish. She ended up smuggling guns and materials across the country. But one great story is that one of the men in the Gestapo office developed a romantic, like a crush on her, and he invited her to the Christmas party. And again, she couldn't say no because that would seem suspect or unusual. Yeah. So that night, two other couriers on their own missions transporting weapons across the country were staying with her. So all three of these Jewish women dressed up as young Christian girls and went to a Gestapo Christmas party. And there's a photograph in the book taken of them at this Christmas party.
Oh, wow. I mean, the risks just seem unreal. Do you think that they were, for the most part, trying to help the greater good, or was there a desire within them to also leave a legacy for themselves? What was it?
I think this was entirely about rescue. And in the cases where they knew they had no chance, they would say, we're a bunch of, you know, starving Jews with two guns. We're not going to topple the Nazis. But for them, it was about pride for future generations, and just about the fight for, as we said, for freedom, for justice, for what was right. They couldn't just stand by.
How did they handle the fear?
It's a good question. I don't know that it's not something that they wrote about. I think they performed. Mm-hmm. I think it was, they were so filled with fury and passion. I think the fear was almost a secondary feeling. Many of them assumed they would be killed. They were going on suicide missions. They didn't think they'd live. They were surprised often when they did live.
Yeah.
So I think that they were very driven on their missions. They do talk about in some diaries of the time about needing to fully enrobe and ensconce themselves in this resistance work, because it actually helped them not feel grief, not feel the horrible feelings around the deaths of their families and the things that they'd witnessed. So they were just performing this, 24 hours a day.
I was surprised to hear how they were able to cope with a lot of this by using humor at a time when we never really think about humor coming out of this situation. And you talk about the story of Lily Rickman, and she actually seems like such a brave and funny young woman who so many of us should try to emulate. What was her story?
She was an example of someone who told jokes during transports to alleviate fear, told jokes at the camps to alleviate fear and create solidarity for herself and for the others around her. I think one of the lines I recall was she had arrived at a camp at perhaps it was Auschwitz, and they shaved the women's hair. And she said something like, "Hey, great, free haircuts." And that was, created a sense of control and camaraderie, and humor is the weapon for people that don't have weapons.
Wow, that's a excellent way of putting it. What was your reaction when you found that Steven Spielberg wanted to option the book for a major motion picture?
I was extremely excited.
I bet. When might that come out?
Well, this is very early stages, so we're just starting to work on the screenplay now. So I don't know. Fingers crossed.
When you look at the stories of these remarkable women, you look at how their lives were, and I'm wondering, do you think you could have done what they did?
No, I don't. And of course, I thought about that all the time, reading about them, writing about them. Would I have done this? Could I have done this? And I don't think so. I think that's why I became so fascinated by them, so obsessed by these figures. They felt like they could do something that I couldn't. They were so different from me, and that's part of what drew me to them.
As you know, the name of our show is Nobody Told Me. So we ask our guests at the end of each show, what is your Nobody Told Me lesson? So what did nobody tell you about having courage and honor and bravery that you didn't learn until you learned about the Ghetto Girls?
That's a good question. I think it's just that, as I said earlier, when I went into this, I was thinking so much about how trauma passes through generations, how difficulties pass through generations. And I come out of this, or I'm coming out of this, thinking how at the same time, strength passes through generations, bravery and courage and positive traits and attributes as well. I feel like nobody told me that I could think about the positive elements that have passed on in my heritage.
Did you feel in some sense that these women were sort of sitting on your shoulder, helping you write the stories?
I felt they were sitting on my shoulder, but I always feel like more like, make sure you're telling the story correctly. I felt a great duty to tell their stories and to do so in as fair and complex and nuanced a way as I could. I did feel the whole, like, if I don't tell this story of Frum Kaplutnitska that I found in some Yiddish documents from the 1940s, I mean, who will?
Yeah. So there's a great responsibility there. How can people connect with you on social media and the internet if they'd like to find out more about your work?
Sure. My website is judybattalion.com, and I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Judy Battalion.
Super. And the book is also available in a version for young people, isn't it?
Yes, there's a young readers edition geared at children ages 10 to 14.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. Well, Judy, we thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, our thanks to Judy Battalion, whose latest book is called The Light of Days, The Untold Story of Women Resistance Fighters in Hitler's Ghettos. And again, her website is judybattalion.com. We wish you the best of luck, Judy, with the book, and we can't wait to see the movie.
Thank you so much.
I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.